Welcome to the Plant Yourself Podcast. I'm your host, Howie Jacobson. Excited to let you know that you can now pre-order my new book, You Can Change Other People, The 4 Steps to Help Employees, Colleagues, Even Family Up Their Game. I wrote it with Peter Bregman, who is my coach teacher, my coaching mentor, and it's now available for pre-order. And when you pre-order, you get a whole bunch of fun, valuable bonuses, including 3 recorded demo conversations where we show you exactly how to go through the 4 steps with real people, and a 1-page cheat sheet so you can follow along. The book itself, when you pre-order, will arrive in your mailbox or inbox on September 22nd, 2021. Here's how to do it. Go to plantyourself.com/pre. That's just P-R-E, all lowercase. That will forward you to the page on the Bregman Partners website that has all the information about how to pre-order. Basically, you just order somewhere, either online or at your local independent bookshop, and you send us the receipt via email, and then you get your bonuses. So I'm really hoping that you will help me make this book a big success. I hope it will. You will find it very valuable, and that once you get it and read it, you'll use it and recommend it to others. And so if you've been listening to this podcast for a while and you have gotten value, this is a really easy way for you to give back. It would be a huge help. So again, that's plantyourself.com/pre, P-R-E, all lowercase. All right, let's get to today's show. A food system based on eating plants is, all things being equal, much more kind to the environment and efficient and just than one based on animal agriculture. That said, there's still a lot of room for improvement, from improving how we farm to be more regenerative and to use less pesticide and to have ecosystems that flourish rather than monocrops. And another thing is, there's a lot of waste in our food system, even the plant-based, whole food plant-based system. Take, for example, something like tofu, which is pretty much a staple for a lot of plant eaters. And when you make tofu, there is a ton of stuff left over that isn't tofu. I've made tofu at home, and this giant pile of, looks sort of like grits or dried out scrambled egg bits called okara. Not much you can do with that. You can add a whole bunch of flavorings and make burgers from it. They're not nearly, as convincing as Impossible and Beyond burgers. And they're not as tasty. They're not as good for you as, bean and rice burgers. So that's where today's guest enters the conversation. Caroline Cotto is a co-founder of Renewal Mills, which looks to take what is waste products from a lot of plant-based food production and upcycle it to reuse it again to either make things themselves, like cookie mixes, or to partner with food manufacturers to reuse it, to take those ingredients and give them a second life so they don't end up at best as compost or at worst in the landfill. So let's hear about the origins of this idea and where it's going now and how you can participate in the upcycling of food. Without further ado, Caroline Cotto, welcome to the Plant Yourself Podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. Super excited to be here.
Yeah, I've never talked about this before. We're going to talk about upcycling food, right?
That's right. Yeah, it's a hot trend right now.
Yeah, and I had never heard of it until I came across your company. Why don't you tell us about Renewal Mill and the basics of what you do?
Absolutely. So Renewal Mill is an upcycled food company that's trying to fight climate change by reducing food waste, which is actually one of the largest drivers of climate change. So what we do is we take the leftover byproducts from food manufacturing and upcycle them into premium ingredients and finished plant-based products. So what that looks like in practice is we're taking the pulps, the nutritious pulps left over when you make plant-based milk, like soy milk and oat milk, and dehydrating it and milling it into high fiber, high protein, gluten-free flours. And then we use those flours in a line of vegan baking mixes and ready-to-eat cookies.
Gotcha. So let's unpack the first statement, which is, food waste is one of the biggest contributors to climate change. Can you draw the line for us?
Yeah. So when you waste food, you waste all of the resources that went into growing that food. So that's the water, the land, the fertilizers, and that's a pretty significant amount of resource waste. And then on the back end, when we waste food and it ends up in a landfill, it releases harmful greenhouse gases into the environment. And so the statistic right now is that about 30% of food globally goes to waste. And in the US, that's closer to 40%. And if we were to count up all of the greenhouse gas emissions emitted from food waste, it would be like the third largest emitter of greenhouse gases behind only China and the US.
Wow. Now, when I think of food waste, I think of, the sad bag of carrots in my fridge that I didn't eat, and then I'm so sorry. I don't think of a byproduct of something else. Like, my own experience with this, my kids were little. I was very, very much into, I think, to your co-founder's story. We had this Omega juicer, and I made the carrot juice, and I had all this pulp left over, and I would like put it through three or four times, but there was still all this pulp. I was like, I'm going to make a cake. And I got to tell you, that was the worst cake in the history of cake.
Yeah, definitely. That is very akin to how we got our start. So my co-founder Claire, she founded Boston's first organic juice company and was just kind of appalled, frankly, at the amount of pulp going to waste through that process. She similarly tried making muffins or crackers with it, but there was just too much to deal with. And so she was like, there has to be a better way. And then we had a fortuitous meeting with the owner of one of the largest artisanal tofu companies in the country. And he was like, you think you make a lot of waste in your, tiny juicing business? I'm making tons and tons of pulp waste at my manufacturing facility. And we quickly realized that this was not a problem that was, just happening in small juicing businesses, but it's happening at all different parts of manufacturing, across the supply chain, across different food products. It's a huge opportunity because a lot of it is the byproducts are just arbitrarily labeled as waste. Like they're perfectly food safe, they're full of nutrients. In fact, we're often processing out the most nutritious part of our food. And so what we're trying to do is really just keep all of that nutrition in the supply chain.
So where does it go now? Where did Tofu Man send his byproduct?
It definitely depends on each producer. So some producers, if they're lucky enough to be close to farmers, can have farmers come pick it up for animal feed. But for other producers who are not close to animal agriculture, it often either goes to land spreading or directly to landfill. And even if you are having a farmer come pick it up, it's often a very inconsistent offtake solution. So if the price of a premium animal feed goes down, then the farmer won't come pick it up. These byproducts, the ones that we're dealing with, they're extremely heavy to transport because they're majority water when they come off the processing line, and they start spoiling within the first 4 hours. So you really need to deal with them quite quickly. Otherwise, you have a pretty smelly situation on your hands.
Wow. And I'm thinking about my audience who are ethical vegans who may not realize that their favorite tofu is cheaper because it's being subsidized by pig farming, right?
I think it's not something that comes to mind immediately. It's oftentimes they do have to pay to have it trucked away to landfill, and so we're offering them a solution that's not only better for the environment, but is an entirely vegan solution and keeping that food in the human supply chain and directed for human consumption.
Right. I mean, I would think, like when I think about, I don't know anything about it, but I think like, the meat factory, like where does like dog food or sausage or the things that are sort of the bottom feeders of our meat-based supply chain, the people have been doing this for a long time. It's not a new idea to take a less than premium part of a food and then turn it into something else.
Absolutely. Yeah, we are under no guise that upcycling is definitely not a new concept. Your grandma was probably upcycling. Any chef who's good at their job is upcycling and making sure that you're using 100% of your input. And I think, meat is definitely somewhere where the input is very expensive. And so people have for a long time been thinking about how do I, get the most value out of this product. So the EPA has a hierarchy of use of the ways to use food that is the least impactful on the environment. And the first thing on that reduction hierarchy is to source reduction to prevent food waste from for food from ever going to waste. And then second is to make sure that it goes to human consumption, then after that animal consumption, then after that compost, and so on down the line. So wherever possible, trying to elevate it to the highest use is the most important thing.
So when I think about like my own experience now, it's okay, I peeled all the onions and potatoes and I have the carrot tops and the celery leaves and I'm gonna like make stock. And what a pain in the butt. And I got, you know, like I have to get enough and maybe freeze it. And then I've got all this stock. That's simple compared to like, you're looking at this problem, like mostly water, really hard to transport, spoils within 4 hours. Who looks at that and goes, oh, let's solve that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge headache for manufacturers, right? Like our first partner was using a significant portion of their factory floor space to house byproducts before disposal. And, you know, they were, you know, throwing out about 60% of the total soybean mass that they brought into the facility to start with. So it's an economic loss. It's not good for sustainability. And it's just a pain to deal with. So I think, you know, the scale is really what makes it an interesting problem because, like I said, most of the things that we're processing out are the most nutritious part. So it's all of this fiber and protein that can be kept in our food. It's also, you know, from a food safety perspective, there's nothing wrong with it. So what we do to kind of try to mitigate those challenges is reduce the time it comes off of the processing line to the time that it's shelf stable. So we're immediately dehydrating it and milling it, so that we're able to kind of reduce that overall volume by taking out the water and then immediately turn it into an ingredient that has like an 18-month shelf life.
So are you like installing machinery in the processing plants of your partners?
That's correct. Yeah. So we're using a co-location model to avoid having to transport these products to a centralized processing facility because we want to avoid that carbon footprint. And the co-location model allows us to do this. So as soon as it comes off the processing line, it immediately gets turned into the upcycled ingredient.
And are you working with like lots of different like artisanal tofu manufacturers or like the big ones? I don't know, Eden or White, what was it, White Oak or?
Yeah, we started with tofu producers. So we have currently one tofu producer in Oakland, Hodo Foods. And then we work with a soy milk producer actually in Minnesota. And then, as I said, we brought on a second ingredient, which was oat milk byproduct. And we're also working with an oat milk producer in the Midwest for that.
Uh-huh. So right now you have like the three locations.
Yeah. And we're going to be adding more as we kind of grow our ingredient portfolio and add new ingredients, as well as expand our supply of our existing ingredients.
Okay. And when you went to your first customer, like, was it an easy sell or were there objections?
Definitely with our first ingredient, which is called Okara flour. It's an unknown ingredient to most folks, unless you kind of grew up in East Asia and are familiar with it. You know, it takes quite a bit of education. And when we started this about 5 years ago, upcycled food was very much not on people's radar. I think as people have seen the real, like, firsthand effects of climate change and have kind of become aware that food waste is a problem, the conversation has started to come more into the mainstream. And so people are more amenable to talking about like this whole movement that we're trying to build around upcycled food. But there is definitely still a significant education piece, especially when we're talking to like R&D folks. How do you use this ingredient? It's actually like similar to a coconut flour. So it has about 66% fiber and 20% protein. And that protein is a complete protein because it's coming from a legume, but it's definitely not a one-for-one replacement for all-purpose flour. So there is a bit of education that comes along with it.
Mm-hmm. What about the, you know, the processor that you're getting the upcycled ingredients from, and you say, hey, we're going to put something in your factory, and like, you know, I assume you're renting the space, you're paying them for their product. Was it like a no-brainer for them, or were there like
Like I said, it's a huge headache for them, right? So they've been paying to have this stuff trucked away. It's been taking up significant space in their factory. They have someone whose full-time job is to like shovel it into buckets and, cart it out. So it's definitely solving a pain point for them. And we say, yeah, basically, like we can save you some space in your factory. Like, let's work together. We pay for the processing of it. We own the equipment. And then, yeah, we're able to turn that waste into revenue.
Gotcha. And so when you have a line of really yummy looking products like cookies and brownies and brownie mix and flours and stuff, do you partner with other companies to make that, or it's under your brand, or do you have a factory that makes it?
Yeah, so we have a split business model. So we're both an ingredients company, and so we're supplying bulk ingredients to other companies to make products with them. So, for example, Pult Pantry is a grain-free chip on the market that uses our Okara flour. Tia Lupita is a Mexican food brand that uses our Okara flour in a grain-free tortilla. Fancy Pants Baking Company makes cookies with both of our flours. And so we have that side of the business. And then we also use some of our ingredients and work with a co-manufacturer to create our baking mix line and our ready-to-eat cookies.
Gotcha. How did you get into this?
I've kind of always joked that I was destined to be in food. My last name means cooked in Italian, and I'm from a town called Sandwich, Massachusetts. And I just have always, really loved to cook and to eat and been fascinated by food. My early career was spent more on the nutrition side of food. So really looking at food deserts in Washington, D.C. and malnutrition in Cambodia. And then I pivoted into tech for a bit, learned a lot, but was ultimately trying to find my way back to food, and ended up working for a startup accelerator that was working on incubating 10 businesses along the food supply chain. And it was being sponsored by Cargill, which is one of the largest ingredients companies in the world. And it was there that I met my co-founder and kind of heard about her firsthand experience in food waste. And combined that with my sort of passion for nutrition and finding ways to keep affordable nutrition in the supply chain. And it was kind of a natural fit. And also, as an avid outdoors woman, really care about climate change and the impact that food has as a lever on that.
It's interesting to hear about Cargill because, like, my thought would be like they're the bad guys.
Yeah, they definitely are investing in a lot of new technologies, new plant-based solutions. They invested in one of the largest pea protein companies in the world. So they're, they know that the world is changing and that we have to find more plant-based solutions, that we have to find more, climate-friendly alternatives. And so they, for the last, this will be the fourth year they're sponsoring this startup accelerator in Minnesota to really look at all of these different technologies and solutions.
So when you're looking at the outputs, your dehydrated flours of various kinds, where do you turn for inspiration as to how what to turn them into? Is it like these old Asian traditions? Is it the last 15 years of the gluten-free movement?
Yeah, it's a little bit of everything. We're really lucky to have on our team a five-time James Beard Award winner, Alice Medrich, who specializes in alternative flours and chocolate. And so her last James Beard Award-winning cookbook was on flavor flours and like how do you take gluten-free flours and make them the hero of different products. And so she's really helped us explore how to use these ingredients in novel ways. All of our, as we're, because we're a plant-based company, all of our products are 100% plant-based, and that's really important to us. And so, yeah, we definitely, look at East Asian traditions, see what they're doing, draw inspiration from there, but also try to really look critically at the market and see the gaps that are missing and how we can fill them.
Okay. So I noticed on, I think it was on your Instagram account, there was a picture of one of the investors, a woman, I can't remember her name off the top of my head, but you got some investment from this incubator with help from Cargill, individual investors. They want their money back, right? Do you ever feel, do you feel any sort of tension between like, you're writing about we are removing more plastic than we're causing. We're transporting things dry to lower down our carbon footprint. It seems like you have a bottom line that far encompasses far more than an economic bottom line. Is there tension there?
I think, investors, the ones that we want on our team, really share that vision and mission of sustainability and like a triple bottom line approach of like, it's not just about making money, it's about leaving the world better than we found it. And so both we have like one of our earliest investors is a vegan investment fund out of Europe, called Beyond Impact. We have a bunch of angel investors that are all really share that mission as well. So I think, there's no real tension there. People who are investing us understand that this is, we're trying to transform the food system, and that's really the goal here. And if we make some money along the way, great, but we have a larger mission to attend to.
Gotcha. Are you still in the investment process with, Series B or whatever?
Yeah, so we are definitely always be investing or raising money, always be raising. So we are definitely looking to start raising again in the next few months here. 2020 was a year of pivoting for us, so we kind of put our head down and have made some big strides on that front. And we're hoping to get to a level where we can raise the next round of financing.
Gotcha. Any instruments for little shots like me, people with, a few hundred, few thousand, or you're only looking for?
Absolutely. Yeah, we ran a Republic campaign for equity crowdfunding last November. But we're, yeah, definitely, if it's a good mission aligned person, we're always looking for additional angel investors of pretty much any check size.
Cool. So, you did mention on the website about plastic, right? So there's plastic in your packaging, but you're removing more plastic than you, how do you do that?
Yeah, so definitely as a sustainable brand, we want to have the most sustainable packaging possible. Unfortunately, compostable solutions aren't quite there yet for how long the shelf life of our product is. So for our flowers, we're looking at like an 18-month shelf life, and most compostable packaging with resealable zippers disintegrates before that shelf life is up. And so we're not able to, at this time, have our packaging be entirely compostable. So what we have as an interim solution is we're certified plastic negative, which means that we're funding projects which remove 2 times as much plastic as we use from the environment. But we're very conscious that this is an interim solution. And so we're constantly reevaluating how we can work towards more sustainable packaging options.
Gotcha. What about, is there technology to reduce the amount of waste produced by the plant-based milks or the tofu in addition to just sending it to you? It's
Hopefully they're trying to extract as much value as they can out of the initial input. In the case of our first partner, they're using like a very old traditional tofu recipe, and this is kind of how it is called for. So I think they're excited to partner with us to be able to say that, we're using 100% of that input, just maybe not in a traditional format. But yeah, there are other producers we're working with that want to reincorporate the product back into different products under their own brand once they partner with us. So, yeah, I think hopefully we're inspiring everyone to look for more efficiency and circularity in their systems across the board.
Gotcha. Well, let's talk about the fun part. What can we eat that you make?
Yeah, so like I said, we have a line of just add oil and water, vegan, gluten-free baking mixes. So we have a dark chocolate brownie, which features our Okara flour, a sugar cookie, which also features the Okara flour, and an oat chocolate chip cookie mix, which features the oat milk flour from the oat milk byproduct. We have a line of ready-to-eat cookies, so a soft-baked chocolate chip Okara cookie, and we're just about to add a second SKU there, so a peanut butter flavor, and that's a double pack cookie. And then if you're an adventurous home baker, we have the pure flours and then a cup for cup gluten-free baking flour that you can kind of use in place of all-purpose flour in your favorite recipe.
And where are they available?
On our website at renewalmill.com. And then our primary markets are California and New York right now for brick and mortar stores, but we're also on a number of e-commerce platforms. So we're on Thrive Market, Imperfect Foods, Amazon, Good Eggs, Fresh Direct. Most of the main ones there.
Gotcha. Are you aiming for Whole Foods or supermarket chains?
Yeah, so we're in Whole Foods in Northern California, hoping to expand to more Whole Foods regions soon. And then, yeah, we have a store locator on our website, so you can find the closest store to you. We're in most of the popular independent stores in California and the New York City area.
Gotcha. So, where do you see your company in 5 years?
You know, we, like I said, we have this split model. So we're really hoping to be the industry's go-to supplier for upcycled ingredients. So we're hoping to add more upcycled ingredients to our portfolio in the coming years. We're already investigating sort of like spent grains from beverage processing and other like nut and seed cakes from cold pressed oil processing as potential alternative next ingredients. And then we also hope to grow our retail presence and brand so that we're kind of the first option we reach for in the baking aisle, the most sustainable option on shelf.
Gotcha. You're gonna go for breweries?
Yeah, so there's definitely some companies in the market that are already working on spent grain from breweries, but we're looking at, we'd love to keep our line gluten-free. So there's some emerging new gluten-free options in that space, which is pretty exciting.
Wow, very, very cool. So, where can people find you?
Yeah, so online at any social media platform, we're at Renewal Mill, and our website is renewalmill.com. And then, yeah, we're also on LinkedIn. And then for finding our products, if you go to our website, there's a store locator for kind of all the small independent stores, as well as those big e-commerce platforms I mentioned.
Gotcha. And the flowers that you mentioned, your James Beard Award cookbook, would that help people?
Yeah, so Alice Medrich is the name of the chef.
Spell her
She
last name.
Medrich
Okay.
Medrich. Her book is called Flavor Flowers. That focuses primarily on gluten-free flowers, not our upcycled flowers, but we do have recipes from Alice on our website as well that kind of show how to use these ingredients in different applications.
Awesome. Anything you want to tell the world that I haven't asked you about that you want to share?
Yeah, so we actually helped found the Upcycled Food Association in 2019. And just a few weeks ago, they released to the world a certification. So now products can be certified upcycled. And that's a unique seal. So very similar to the Non-GMO Project butterfly seal or the USDA organic stamp, you can now find a certified upcycled seal on a growing number of products, including ours. So hopefully when you're shopping around the grocery store and looking all across all aisles, you'll start seeing this certification seal on products. So would encourage people to look for that and educate friends and family on what that means. Like when I purchase upcycled food, I'm helping reduce food waste, which is ultimately helping fight climate change.
What does the seal look like?
It's kind of like it has up and then it says cycled and it has a green leaf and it's a black and white logo. So there's kind of vertical and horizontal ones, but it's a pretty cool looking seal. So
Cool. And
definitely check that out.
what was your goal in starting the organization? Because you're in a sense you're incubating competitors, right?
Yeah, it's a trade association. You know, we really knew that general understanding in the public of upcycled foods was quite low, and we needed to have sort of a rising boats or rising tides lift all boats mentality when it comes to growing this movement. So the thought there was that if we work together, we can help sort of do this massive consumer education campaign and make it so that, you know, the average person walking down the street understands what upcycled food means and why we should be investing in it.
Awesome. Well, anything else?
No, we're super excited to engage with the plant-based community. If people have ideas of what products they would like to see next from us, please don't hesitate to reach out. We're just at info@renewalmill.com. I think there's lots of room for innovation in the space and overlap between the upcycled food world and the plant-based world. So yeah, super excited to work on that.
So, if people want to try the food, if they want to give you suggestions as to what you can do next, and if they want to find out about investing in the next round, renewalmill.com.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, Caroline Cotto, thank you so much for this amazing work, for the vision and the, you're the COO, so that means like you're the one like
turning all the wheels, right, on the daily basis to keep everything going.
Yeah, we're a small team, so it's all hands on deck over here, but trying our best to make this vision a reality.
All right, well, I'll let you get back to the upcycles. thank you so much for all you do and for taking the time today.
Thanks so much, Howie. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. You want to find out more about Renewal Mill and Caroline, you can go to today's show notes, which is at plantyourself.com/485. So in movement news, have a bad back. I was hoeing last Wednesday and I was down, kind of bent over for about an hour. And when I tried to straighten up, I kind of couldn't. So I've had a couple of chiro visits. And I've been trying to do some foam rolling on the IT band for my right leg, also for, you know, for hip and for knee issues. And so it's been a lot of walking this week. No Ultimate Frisbee, so a little bit grumpy because of that. We have a tournament coming up this coming weekend, so in 5 days from today. So I hope I'll be able to play somewhat in preparation for the big tournament down in Sarasota, Florida, first weekend in November. In garden news, we've had some rain lately, and the muscadines are probably the last few days for those. They have gotten so delicious. So I learned a technique. You don't have to kind of chew on the skin for hours. You can just sort of bite, pop the inside in your mouth, toss the skin, get rid of the pits. They're so delicious, just really, really sweet. I'm sure they make astoundingly sweet wine, and someone who grew up with Manischewitz Concord grape, this might be right up my alley. Otherwise, in the garden, everything's sort of sitting there where I dropped the hoe. The cover crops are slowly coming in and covering, and we got a whole bunch of garlic. So then once I get back on my feet and I can get a couple more beds hoed, we will be doing overwintering garlic, and that's usually ready to harvest around late June. All right, time for thanks. Thanks to Will Ridenour for allowing me to use his beautiful song, Sabali Dawn, The Dance of Peace. You can find more of Will's music at his website, willridenour.com. And of course, thanks to all of you Plant Yourself Podcast patrons, Kim Harrison, Lynn McClellan, Brittany Porter, Dominic Maurer, Barbara Whitney, Tammy Black, Amy Good, Amanda Hatherley, Mary Jane Wheeler, Ellen Kennelly, Melissa Cobb, Rachel Behrens, Tina Scharf, Tina Ahern, Jen Filkinowski, David Bizek, The Mysterious Michelle X, Elsbeth Feldman, Leah Stoller, Alan Christensen, Colleen Peck, Michelle Landry, Josina, Sarah Durkis, Kelly Cameron, Janet Selby, Claire Adams, Tom Franzek, Jeanette Benham, Gil Assert, David Donahue, Blair Seiberg, Dorona Vizov, Gio and Carolyn Argentati, Jody Friesner, Misha Rosen, Michael Warbeck, Aviva Lael, Alicia Lemus, Val Linneman, Nick Harper, Bandana Chali, Molly Levine, The Inscrutable Harry R., Susan Laverty, The Panda Vegan, Craig Kovic, Adam Scharf, Karen Burry, Heather Morgan, Nigel Davies, Marion Blum, Teresa Koppel, Julian Watkins, Breed O'Connell, Sharon Hirschman, Linda Ayad, Holm Hedegaard, Iza Tuzinwa, Connie Hainline, Aaron Greer, Alicia Davis, Heather O'Connor, Carolyn Jensen, Sherry Lakoski of Plant Power for Health, Karen Smith, Scott Marani, Karen and Joe Crabtree, Kirby Burton, Teresa Carell, Kevin McCauley, Elizabeth Rothschild, Ann Jesse, Cheryl Dwyer, Jenny Hazelton, Peter W. Evans, Dennis Bird, Darby Kelly, Lori Fanny, Linnea Lundquist, Emily Iaconelli, Levy Wallach, Rosamund McAtee, Dan Picorni, Stephen Leenan, Patty DiMartino, Mike and Donna Kartz, Deanne Bishop, Bilberry Elf, Marjorie Lewis, Trisha Adams, Nancy Sheldon, Lindsay Bayshore, Gunmarit Hagen, Tracy Gullidge, Laura Heaton, Meg from Mama Says, Stacey Stokes, Ben Savage, Michael Kay, David Hughes, Connie Rogers, Claire England, Sally Robertson, Paranganchi, Amy Daly, Brian Tourville, Mark Jeffrey Johnson, Josie Dempsey, Karen Schmidt, Pamela Hayden, Emily Perryman, Allison Corbett, Richard Stone, Lauren Vaught of Edible Musings, Aaron Hasty, Sean Owen, Sagar Nayak, Erica Piedra, Danielle Roberts, Michael Lushton, Sarah Johnson, Catherine Floyd, for your generous support of the podcast. That's it for now. As always, be well, my friends.